Luke chapter 14. We'll start with verse 25. Now great multitudes went with Jesus, and he turned and said to them, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple." So this passage here are hard teachings that Jesus has given here to the multitude that is reminiscent, and I got this idea from Kaufman, from John 6, that was hard sayings and hard teachings that Jesus was giving the multitudes, which was actually in the past, about a year or so previous. But here Jesus again is giving hard teachings, but that's why we took this little detour of last week to go to John 6. And so, this word that gets translated hate into English from Greek would be better translated as loveless. So it should be, and for our modern understanding, it should read, if anyone comes to me and doesn't love your father, mother, wife, and children, brothers and sisters less than you love me, then you cannot be my disciple. So we must love all of our loved ones, even ourselves, less than we love Jesus. Otherwise, we cannot be his disciple. And what Kaufman's thought was, well, Jesus's teachings on all these various parables and whatever the various teachings that he'd been giving the multitude, well, they were lapping it up. They were really liking this. But now Jesus is going to bring them back to reality that this is not all peaches and cream. There are some hard sayings, and there's going to be a hard path that the Christian has to travel down. Otherwise, we are not worthy of the kingdom. So verse 27, and whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Now, Kaufman's comment on this verse is that modern-day commentators have really lightened this down to just basically being obedient to Jesus. But Kaufman said that's not how they saw it, and that's not what Jesus meant by this. He meant if you are not willing to go to death, and this cross is obviously a reference to the crucifixion that the Romans were doing at that time that Jesus would himself endure, and that he was letting them know, just as Jesus said in Revelation 2:10, if you're found faithful unto death, you go to the point of death, then you'll receive the crown of life. So this is obviously Jesus is telling them, if you're not willing to die for the sake of God's kingdom, you cannot be my disciple and not worthy of the kingdom. Verse 28. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest, after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see begin to mock him. So Jesus is helping them to count the cost. And one of these costs is you have to be willing to give your life for the sake of God's kingdom. And then he gives another example of the sacrifice, another illustration. But first, verse 30, to finish this up about the building that the man didn't think ahead of time of how much materials he was going to need to finish the building. And then people would mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Okay, here's the second illustration, verse 31. Or what king going to war against another king does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men, with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? So, here This king did not correctly assess his adversary and realized that the adversary had 20,000 men and he only had 10,000. So unless his men were exceptionally skilled, it would be futile to go against someone that has twice the number of an army that you have. Verse 32, to complete this, or else while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. So he's giving them a reality check here that there are going to be difficulties coming. And definitely we know from history, the first century did have lots of difficulties. And, you know, we are very, I'll say fortunate, but it may not necessarily be so fortunate because it's caused a complacency in us. But we are not facing any persecution. So far, the government is not having any restrictions on us, which that could be viewed in a lot of ways as good, but also it could be viewed in a negative light because due to complacency is in satisfying, being satisfied is a very dangerous place to be. And we're not near as sharp as they were in the first century due to some of this lack of persecution and restrictions and difficulties that Jesus is telling that they were going to go through and that we very likely are probably not prepared for if it hits us. Then he finishes up with verse 34 and 35. Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor for the dunghill, but men throw it out. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. And I'll finish up with a paragraph that Kaufman had about these two verses. Here, salt stands for the spirit of self-sacrifice. When in a man or in a nation or in a congregation, that salt is savorless, then that spirit is dead. And there is no hope remaining for the man, for the people, or for the congregation. The salt represents disciples who would count the cost and pay the price. Men who would not count the cost were as worthless as tasteless salt. There has been criticism from modern-day skeptics since the chemical sodium chloride cannot lose its taste, but Jesus was not talking about sodium chloride. The salt of the first century was a completely different product, which frequently lost its taste. And now, but what he was saying is, there's lots of criticism saying, well, the chemical sodium chloride never loses its flavor or its taste. But they did not use sodium chloride as their seasoning of choice. It was something different. And it lost its taste, and Jesus affirmed that it did lose its taste, at least from time to time. So over time, it would not season the food anymore, and then it was completely worthless. And now Kaufman ends with this last sentence, conclusion. Being a Christian demands strict conditions. However, the rewards are abundantly sufficient to justify any and all sacrifices required in following our Savior. I'll read it one more time. Being a Christian demands strict conditions. However, the rewards are abundantly sufficient to justify any and all sacrifices that are required in following our Savior. So we will end there, and Lord willing, we'll pick up with chapter 15 next week.